Hey, how you doing? In these tough economic times, you may find yourself a little short on cash. So where you gonna go? The bank? They don't got no money. They're begging for scratch from Uncle Sam.
Nah, you need to go to the place that'll get you the cash you need. Vinny and Angelo's.
Bad credit? No credit? Hey, no problem.
Yeah, because we know where you live.
And that's good enough for us.
So stop by Vinny and Angelo's today. Conveniently located in the industrial park out by the airport.
And Vinny and Angelo's, if you got problems money can solve, we say forget about it.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
A village in Nepal is constructed entirely of frozen mountain climbers. It's the Onion Radio News. This is Doyle Redland reporting. Scientists exploring near the base of Mount Everest have discovered a remote village built with the frozen corpses of failed mountaineers. Team leader Dr. Kevin Tron was at first horrified by what he saw, but later expressed admiration for the villagers' craftsmanship.
I've never before seen a vaulted ceiling so well built entirely out of Australians.
Village elders told the explorers of their hope that an avalanche will soon provide enough Italians to complete construction of the Sherpa Hall of Fame. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Supermarket Deli Worker.
Mr. Supermarket Deli Worker.
Some are content to stock shelves. Others, merely cashiers. But you, sir, operate the most dangerous machine known to man. The meat slicer.
There's a finger in my olive loaf.
When we ask for a pound of pastrami, Mr. Supermarket Deli Worker, you plop down a pound and a half and say, is a little over okay?
Only if I could pay you a little under.
And no one cuts the cheese quite like you.
That cheddar's really sharp, yeah.
So the next time you're holding number 67 and they're calling out number 23, wave your salami and salute to the man who's number one. Mr. Supermarket Deli Worker, a real American hero.
Mr. Supermarket Deli Worker.
Your hairnet just fell into the coleslaw.
Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for the best morning show on radio. It's Sam in the Morning, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And good morning and welcome to Thursday, February 25th. The year is 2010 and we're moving right along with Kira in the studio, of course.
Good
always on
morning.
Time, always smiling, always sunny.
You know what? There's not a lot to not smile about sometimes, you know?
That's true. I like that you're a positive, optimistic person. That's cool.
You know, it's more fun to be that way.
Yeah, refreshing. Huh?
You can look at the negative side of life and you can let it get you down.
Or that's
you can
true.
Turn that frown upside down, Sam.
Yeah.
To a smile.
It's also, it depends, I think, on the disposition, you know, the temperament of the person. So to
yeah.
some people, it comes easier to
that's
be happy.
That's true. I used to be very like... I used to get really pissy with my negative friends. Mm-hmm. I used to be like, why can't you just be happy? Why can't you see that the sun is shining and there's birds chirping? And then I just started realizing, you know, everybody's coming from a different perspective. You never know what people are struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. So many people have different things.
Yeah. So to you, it comes easily.
I mean, it's not always easy. There's a choice involved, you
right,
know. There,
right.
I definitely have to make a choice. Like, there's little things in life that if you... give a lot of attention to can really get you down and I'm just like, but you're carrying it around,
right?
Like, traffic, carrying that around,
right?
People taking forever. Like, I got things like I have a weird sensitivity to sound.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in a movie theater. I can hear the of the popcorn.
Really?
I can hear
yeah.
saliva breaking down the food in the person's mouth mm-hmm. next to me, and I can hear the rustling of like the plastic,
the bags,
yeah. And I mean, if I tune into it, it's almost like it drives me like wanting to just stab somebody.
Really? Wow.
So I have to go, you know what, Kara, like, this is what you got to deal with if you're going to go to a movie.
Yeah.
Like, relax, like, shut it down. Shut it down. You know?
You should have it looked at. I mean, that's...
it is a little weird.
It is a little weird.
Do you have any weird pet peeves like that, or...?
Yeah, I guess I do. I just like can't think of them right now.
No? Nothing bothered you? No. You're pretty up, then. You're pretty...
For the most part, no. But I'm known as a rather pessimistic person.
Really?
You know? Yeah. But by the people that know me.
That know you really well?
Yeah.
But, that's funny. No, yeah. I never get that vibe from you.
Family. No, no. I mean, I've come a long way, actually, in my life. You know, I'm a lot more optimistic now, and things are working out, you know. So there's a lot more to smile about.
There is, yeah.
Yeah.
There is a lot to smile about. Yeah. Smiles.
So did you rush here this morning? I see you're wearing sporty clothes today.
Sporty Spice. Actually, I figured I'm going to go. The weather's pretty right now, so I'm going to go run.
It is really nice.
I'm going to go run. There's a hiking trail for Ryman Canyon that's in Sherman Oaks. So it's,
right.
I'm going to just
hit I've heard about that one. Is that like off of Laurel Canyon or
off
something?
Off of Laurel Canyon, and it's kind of going up Laurel Canyon, but not very far up. And then there's, but they just started charging for parking, so find street parking.
Really?
Yeah, you don't want to pay like $5 or $3 to park.
Do you see a lot of people there when you go?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty high traffic volume of a lot of people there, and it's cool. It's a valley hike. It's a valley hike, so it's not amazing as the other hikes. No, that's not true. It's actually a very gorgeous hike, but it's there's a lot of people there. I try to do it twice. I try to run it. And it's pretty, the parts of it are pretty steep, and then I walk the downhills, and then I circle around and do it again.
Yeah. So you're a runner, actually, right?
Yeah, actually, I'm a runner. I mean, I wish I was a little more consistent with everything in my life.
Right.
But I do. I kind of, when I run, I run. So, and it kind of makes up for the days that I don't run.
Because, really?
Yeah, like, I'll do another hike, Runyon Canyon, which that's like the Hollywood hike everybody knows about. But I live about 2 miles away, or about a mile and a half, 2 miles. So I'll run to the hike, and then I'll actually do the hike or runs parts of the hike because it's really, really hard.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the hike, I'll run home.
Wow.
So it's a pretty high impact, you know, run. And then if I don't get to run the next day, it kind of, you know.
Wow. That's too much work for me, man.
It is a lot of work. But see, I love to eat, and I'm from Texas.
Uh-huh.
Whatever that's got to do with anything.
Well, yeah, I guess. Well, you love food.
I freaking love food, Sam. Yeah. I mean, I try to eat healthy, but there's so much. My life is just so full of fun, and everybody's bringing food around, or, you know, there's just so much social activity that's centered around food, and you don't want to always be rocking a salad when you're going out with friends.
That's true, yeah.
You know, so I want to be able to, like,
eat. Well, that's a good strategy, actually.
Yeah,
you know?
And I have friends that are like, you don't need to work out today or whatever, and people don't get that it's not always because you're trying to, like, be in shape. It just feels good. Like, after you start doing it, you just feel like your attitude changes, the sun is so good for you. I mean, parts of it are, and just it makes you feel like alive, and that's like working in a gym. I can't get down with it.
You don't like the gym?
Heck no, I hate it.
Yeah, so you
smells
like outdoors
like balls.
And stuff.
It's no.
Yeah.
Smells
what do
like,
balls smell like?
Oh, come on. Like you never rocked.
No, I don't.
You never had a case of some musty nuts.
Yeah, but I don't go around sniffing it. And besides, how can you smell it if people are dressed?
Well,
you know?
I'm just saying, like, I've had brothers. I've walked into their room, and it's like, or like a gym. I mean,
so balls have a distinct smell to you?
I mean, I don't go around smelling it, but I think that they're just more of like a musty scent.
Uh-huh.
Don't you think?
I don't know.
Oh, come
I don't
on,
know.
Come
no,
on.
No, I really don't know what you refer
you've never,
to.
Okay, you've never, listen,
I mean,
listen.
Yeah, I mean, I sniffed my balls maybe a couple times or my hand or something, but that's like a long time ago.
But
you
no,
know, I don't go around doing that.
Well, you shouldn't, but my point is this, like, have you, like, worked out or something and had on gym shorts and it got, like a little bit of, like, a furnace down there and, like, kind of.
It does get hot, but I got to be honest with you, it never really smells, you know, when I work out, although I haven't worked out in years, so who knows how it is now.
But you know, I'm just, it's just, I think it's just a kind of, I'm not, I don't, I haven't like sniffed any, you know, any musty nuts recently, but I'm just telling you from the times I remember my brothers and just that, just guys have a different BO scent than girls do.
Right. That's true.
It all is gross, but I'm just saying it. They have a distinct different scent.
Yeah. I know. You know what I don't like in the summer is a lot of people don't take showers for a day or two, and then they really, really stink, you know? You just walk by them, and that's not the smell of balls, man. That's just the smell of a
like,
person that's dirty, you know?
Yeah.
And it happens so much, and that smell just, like, it hits me, and, you know, I want to throw up.
I don't get it. I don't get it, like, the whole, like, rockin' BO and stuff. I mean, you know, well, I'll be honest. If I'm working out it's just gonna. I mean, I still wear deodorant and like, you know, put maybe some perfume on, but you know, I'll kind of marinate it in a bit.
Yeah.
You know, because it's almost like a sense of like, I worked out. This thing's, I'm just gonna let it kind of furnace up a bit.
Exactly. We don't always have to look and smell good.
Well, it kind of feels like a sense of accomplishment. Like you're like, worked out hard.
Yeah.
Not really. I mean,
the working out part, I agree with you.
Yeah,
you know?
It's kind of like I don't need to go shower right away. I'll run some errands and then I'll come home. And what I find out, and my girlfriends totally agree with me, is when you've worked out hard or like you've been running around doing errands and you're kind of skeezed up and you're like, I'm like a house mom today, even though I'm not a house mom. But you know, you're just like working hard, and then you really kind of put off the shower for a little bit. And then you take your shower, and then you do your hair and makeup. Everything's, like, super fresh.
Right.
It's like, because when you keep showering all the time and doing your hair and makeup, it gets a little bit stagnant and stale, and it doesn't have the same fluff to it, and it doesn't, your hair and just the look, it just looks like, But when you've been crunched up a bit, you've been crunching it out, and then you go and take a good shower, and your hair is fresh and clean, and your makeup, you just feel like, and like.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Anyway.
And how long have you been running? I mean, how long has this been going on?
I mean, I've been running since, I'd say, like, about 10 years. But, I mean, I'm not,
really?
Like, I mean, I'm an average-sized girl. I'm not one of these, like, super thin, like, don't eat, work out all the time kind of people. I literally love doing it, and I love eating. So the combo puts me in a pretty healthy.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty lucky that you love to do it.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, there's something about getting outside and running, and it's like there's a visual stimulus to it, clears your mind. And then I love being in LA and doing it because there's so much community. Like you can go to Santa Monica, do the stairs, which is, that's not really running, although I try to do it, but there's so many people there. And then what I really want to do is I really want to eventually do a marathon and a triathlon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I've been saying that for years. So.
Yeah.
That takes a heck of a lot of discipline.
Really?
Yeah, and that's not really my thing.
Well, we actually have a show on triathlon that comes right after us.
Really?
In the second channel. Yeah, the triathlon, the Simon Gowan triathlon show. Yeah.
Well, those people
it's
are
very
crazy.
Popular. Yeah.
They're crazy.
Yeah.
I worked a triathlon one time, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous.
Is it really hard?
It depends on the length that you do, but either way, I mean, it's a swim, bike, run.
Right.
And, I mean, if you do the full triathlon, it's... You know, you're running a marathon. I mean, that's Ironman actually, but it's almost a mile swim, and then a 13 mile bike ride, I think, and then a 6 mile run. I'm sure that's off a bit, but it's somewhere in that vicinity.
Right.
So it's endurance, but I've never trained for it, but you know, I already run. I've used to swim on swim team. I'm sure I can handle it.
Yeah. What's the farthest you've run?
13 miles.
13. So that's not bad. You can run a marathon.
I think
then,
I can
right?
run a marathon, yeah.
Right.
I think I could. There's actually the LA Marathon's coming up, and I haven't trained for it at all.
Right.
But I'm like, you know, maybe I should just jump in and do it. And
yeah.
If I can't do it all, I'll just walk.
Exactly. You know, I mean, but
you know,
at least you try.
Yeah, at least I tried.
Or how about training for it? I mean,
yeah,
just
I really
that
want
you can
to
actually do it.
Yeah,
you know?
I want to do that. It's been one of those things where, again, going back to consistency, it's like the training days, and, you know, Saturdays are usually your long run. So, you know, Saturday means Friday night, you can't party too hard. You have to wake up at like 5 a.m. and start running.
Oh, God forbid that you don't party hard on Friday.
I mean, come on, Sam. It's, you know. I mean, I'm
Can
already,
you manage?
You know, I'm already having to wake up at 7 o'clock to be here on the weekdays. Well, what more do you want from me?
Exactly.
No,
sleep in.
No, yeah. But I'm still considering it, you know.
Yeah.
One of these days.
That would be cool. Yeah. Those are accomplishments, you know. I mean,
yeah.
I could never do this, you know.
Yeah,
I can't even run a fucking mile.
Doesn't matter. You can. Nobody. Everybody starts somewhere. You totally could.
Yeah.
What you do is you go outside. You put your cigarette down first of all.
Exactly. Do they allow cigarettes during the run?
I don't think so. But I was this guy was running one time. This guy offered me a cigarette. He's like, hey, you want to smoke? And I was laughing so hard. I was like, no. But you basically what you do is you just go outside, walk. Stretch, walk some more, and then just like visually pick a marker. Say, okay, from here to the stoplight, I'm just gonna run.
I see. Okay.
And
don't
kill yourself. Just run what run at a comfortable pace.
Right.
Then stop, walk a little bit more, and you just keep picking markers. And then eventually you'll go, oh, I'm gonna pick a marker that's a little further away.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And so I think it's cool.
Yeah.
Anybody can do it. People just think mentally it just seems
hard.
Yeah,
but I don't enjoy running. I don't know, you know?
It's something that...
Hiking is different. You get to experience the place, and it's not really sport, you know? I mean, you just go there for the enjoyment.
Well, I think what happens, and this is what people don't get, is it's initially running is hard. Initially, anybody running is hard because it's like you're working your engine out that hasn't been worked out.
Right.
But it gets to where you get to, like... a place where that heart rate becomes familiar and comfortable, mm-hmm. and it almost feels good. I know it's weird and twisted to say mm-hmm. that, but it almost feels like a certain kind of that level of exertion and a little bit of the pain
right.
feels warm and comfortable. And then when you're finished, you just feel really clean on the inside.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I know that happened when I used to go to the gym and stuff. You know,
yeah.
I do like the elliptical and aerobics and things like that. You
yeah,
know?
Same kind of.
Yeah, I would get a workout, you know. And so I know what you mean about it feeling good afterwards, you know.
Yeah.
And then you take a shower and all that, and it's like
yeah.
the best feeling, you know.
Yeah. Then you're all.
And especially
like,
if you do it in the morning, then your whole day really goes nicely.
Yeah, this morning I was gonna get up and run. I was like, this just isn't gonna happen.
No, huh?
It was like 6:30. I was like, not gonna happen.
Not gonna happen.
It's not gonna happen. So I'm gonna do it afterwards.
Yeah.
I saw TJ. I mean, he comes in with his little workout duds on. I was like,
yeah,
I'll
that's
do it
true.
Too.
He works out too.
Yeah. Nobody's really seeing me. So.
Yeah.
I'll crunch it up.
Yeah.
I'll be the crunch girl.
And more than anyone, I need to do some running since I'm a smoker. I'm getting older and stuff.
Any effects? Have you felt effects from the smoking?
Well, I mean, there's always effects, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. you feel your lungs are not as they should be, probably, you know. But, you know, I think about this. You know, it's like I look at the full ashtrays and I'm going, my God, I put all this fucking shit in my body for years. For years. I mean, how can the body take this?
Yeah.
You know?
Everybody's got a different genetic kind of, makeup. So some people get away with it for longer and other people, they don't. Like
right.
a friend of mine, her mom was just recently diagnosed with cancer. They removed it, but it was from years of smoking like 30 years ago.
Really?
She hasn't smoked for like 20 years, but
wow.
she smoked for about 10 years or something younger. And
really?
And
they think that caused it?
It wasn't in her lungs. It had actually to do with her, I think, bladder or something. Or not bladder. There's something that your body filters out.
Right.
One of those, like kidneys or something like that. Pancreas, something.
Yeah.
Filtration system. And that because of those years of smoking, it affected that organ.
Yeah. See, that's scary stuff, you know.
Yeah,
I'm not trying
to scare you, but
No, I know. I mean, I should be scared a little bit into sanity.
Well, I mean, it's just like everybody's got vices and everybody's got addictions. It's kind of like it's one step at a time. I think what stops people from, you know, working out or giving up something, and I've got my own stuff. It's like we think of the long road and we're like, we can't
right.
do this.
Yeah.
But if you look at it as just like one day at a time, like how can I lessen it one day at a time?
Right.
I don't know.
Right. No, I mean, that makes sense. That's how they do recovery programs and stuff, you know. So that makes more sense, you know, if you don't look like you're running. You know, if you say, hey, I'm going to run half a mile as opposed to a marathon, you know, I can do it, you know.
Yeah, and then just thinking, wow, you know, and the next thing you know, you ran a whole mile.
Yeah.
Really. And
I bet you even the marathon runners are not like looking at the whole
No, they're
thing,
so.
You know?
What's
like,
so inspiring about it is that these people are from all different walks of life, all different ages, all different pace levels as far as like how fast they run. And people walk run it. People run it straight. Nobody runs it straight unless you're really like in it to win it, you know. But
right.
You know, a lot of people stop, stretch, walk, and they keep doing that. They've got like basically if they're on a 10-minute mile run, they run their 10 minutes, and then they let's say walk for two.
Oh, you are allowed to do that. Right?
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
Okay, so that's when you're not concerned with winning. You're just concerned with
No, you're
with
just
making.
Personal goals.
Right,
and, you
exactly.
know, and you got to understand, I mean, it's strategic, too. A lot of times when you first start out, you're like, I don't need a two-minute walk or a 30-second walk or a minute walk. You feel good.
Right.
But 26 miles down the road, you're going to be hurting crazy because you need to kind of let your bones and your joints and everything and your muscles kind of get a chance to kind of have a break.
Yeah.
If you're running for 4 hours straight, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Wow.
So, or 3 hours.
It's a long
whatever.
Fucking run, man.
It's long. But, you know, it's really cool because the LA Marathon, I think they're going downtown all the way to Marina Del Rey or something like that.
Yeah. It ends downtown, I think.
Oh, it does?
Yeah, because we used to be there. That's where the studio used to be. And they would block off, like, blocks.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't even walk around there. And I remember it well, not last year, but the year before. And, so they did, like, a whole thing and stuff like that. And I remember it was ending there.
Yeah.
Downtown.
I think I may do it.
Yeah?
I'm just going to... The only thing is that I need to get some new gear. I just need new shoes. And I need to get, like, I think it's called Body Glide or something that basically it's like this like, little gel stuff you put on freaking your whole body because you don't want to chafe.
Really?
Because you can chafe. Like, your toes can chafe.
Uh-huh.
Your nipples can chafe. Like,
really?
Anything. Like, even men that wear, like, a shirt... Mm-hmm. You know, men's nipples will like bleed.
Really?
Just because of the over the sweat.
Yeah.
And the salt and the sweat, you know,
right,
your salt.
Right, the friction and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll
wow.
change. Yeah. So I think I'm going to go dip myself in chocolate or something and go
there
on.
You go. Run naked.
That is, oh, that'd be awful. Oh, my gosh. That'd be the most embarrassing damn thing in the world. It's so funny because I live with these, you know, I live with these two other beautiful blonde girls. And they're so funny because, like, last night I came home and I had a couple drinks. I had a great time. And they were already home and they just love when I come home. They just love to mess with me. And like, cause they call me grandma cause I like go to bed earlier than they do. Cause I don't stay up till 3 AM or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I'm in bed and they come and they jump on my bed to try to wake me up and
really?
I'm like, get off of my bed. And we're just laughing. It's like, it's so like we're 3 years old. And then again, Sarah's getting dressed and she's like half naked and topless. And then Claire decides to get topless. And then they both kind of run around me topless. It's not like a sexual.
That's what I wouldn't give to be
I know,
a fly on the
but
wall.
It's not like it's not like sexually erotic. It's just
right.
funny. And then
yeah.
like, you know, I always kind of, the thing is like, I am really obviously well endowed on the top. Mm. And these girls, you know, they're not as much way compared to me.
Right.
So like, if I were to like bust it out and be like, if I were to bust it out and be like bouncing around like a damn gummy bear topless with them, be like, hey, they'd be like, no, put it up, because it's just so much boob.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I just have the body that if you smack it, it smacks you back. It's just like there's, you know,
yeah.
it's interactive. So it's funny because I was just thinking about that because I, for a second, I almost like tried to jump in and I was like, oh, wait a minute, Carrie, you can't do that.
Yeah. So what's your relationship with your boobs? I mean, do you like them? Do you find them to be a hindrance?
Both. I think it works for you and against you. I mean, I personally love, you know, I love what I have. I mean, I know what my strengths and weaknesses are, and I think that I feel really feminine. Mm. I feel like they're really pretty, and they're just so awesome, and I look so hot, and I just look at myself all the time in my bedroom naked. No, I love having them, and they're, you know, they're not implants, they're real, so
right,
it's
good. Obviously.
But, the thing is why is it off? Yeah,
I mean, men notice these things, you know,
yeah.
and I know that most men,
somebody said that to
myself,
me last night, though, that's funny.
Only naturals, I hate implants.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't look good. They never look good.
Yeah, they
look very rarely. Okay, yeah. I've seen some good boob jobs, but for the
Did you get that on
Howard Stern and stuff, you know.
Oh, okay.
But other than that, yeah, I'm not for that, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, many women think that men like it, but the men I know, most of them do not like
fake boobs.
I've met
guys that are just like they don't. It's more of a novelty, I think. It's like it's eye catching, but it's not necessarily what they want.
Exactly.
But no, last night I was out and anyway, I was actually at another mixer. It's funny, I went with a friend. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't even try to network really that much because I think it's such BS. But it's fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, somebody had made a comment. Anyway, but the whole boob thing is interesting because I literally am wearing, like, I have a dress that Claire and I, my other roommate, she and I bought the same dress. It's this gorgeous red dress. It's so freaking cute.
Uh-huh.
So cute. I love this red dress. Anyway, so I wore it last night, and I looked really hot, okay? But Claire wears it, and she's, like, a very petite on the top, and she's really gorgeous. She's such a gorgeous girl, a head turner. But she's got, you know, really very petite on the top, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she just looks pretty. She looks really pretty and just... Right. La 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 la. My name is Claire, and I'm pretty in my red dress. And then I put it on, and it's like da da, and it's like it looks.
Look out.
And it's not like I'm trying. I just want to wear the same damn dress.
Uh-huh.
I just want to wear this dress. It's a good dress, and it looks completely different on me.
Well,
so
yeah.
I wear these clothes, and I actually had the thought the other day, like, man, I love having a large chest, but I kind of was thinking about a breast reduction just so that I can wear certain clothing.
Yeah.
I won't do it, but my point is
I don't ever do it.
I'm not going to, but my point was, like, I kind of thought about a breast reduction in the sense of, like, it would be nice to wear this clothing and it not give off a message.
Right.
That because I'm not really trying to give off that message.
Right.
I just want to wear these clothes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
But it's the same, you know.
Yeah, but you don't have a choice. You have to find clothes that suit you and your body shape.
Well,
it
looks hot. It's just looking like...
Does it? I mean...
Yeah.
So, if she feels the dress... What happens to you? I mean, where do you put the boobs?
No. What was a different size? It's not like I'm wearing her size.
Yeah, but I mean, so the style can accommodate small and large boobs?
Yeah, yeah.
I see.
It's just still a lot of cleavage.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
There's a lot of cleavage. I'm not wearing like an extra small or anything.
Right.
I'm wearing
okay.
a large, you know, but my point is it's still, you know, it's a pretty, just, you know, just a different look.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I could button it up, and I'm not with that dress. I could wear something that's, you know, a higher neckline and look more grandma, but
right.
I don't like that look either.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so going back to your question, yeah, there's definitely kind of, you know, a duality to it. Mm-hmm. It's pretty. I feel feminine. I love it. I feel girly. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you need to be taken seriously and da-da-da-da. So I've tried to kind of taper it to the where I'm going. You know what I mean?
Right,
like
right.
Last night was fine because I was at a really nice lounge club in Hollywood, and it was a really fun event. So it
yeah.
wasn't like I was the only one with cleavage or anything.
Right.
You know, but if I'm going to go to like a day picnic with a bunch mm-hmm. of children around.
Yeah.
You know,
you're not going to do it. Yeah.
I'm going to try not to do it.
Right. Yeah.
That's all I can
but
promise.
Do you ever realize what that does to men, though, when you have a cleavage like that and nice breasts and that? Do you realize what happens to men? Because it's not just looking and going, wow, you know, this is nice. It can make a man crazy.
Well, Sarah, I actually have been...
I have to be honest.
I've been told that. I mean, I just... Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess I get it. What does that mean, though? Like, you don't
No,
wear
it, it only means that it requires a lot of responsibility.
It really does. I think, you know what, you're absolutely right. I'm definitely learning boundaries with it. I'm learning the more appropriate times to wear certain things.
Right.
You know, and I'm learning responsibility with it. But there's times when literally, I wear stuff that's buttoned up.
Yeah.
It's slightly fitting, and
yeah.
it's just still an issue.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what I was trying to say is actually not a negative thing. You know, I mean, it's not like, no, you shouldn't do it or whatever. I just said that it's very effective with men.
Unless they're not boob guys.
Yeah. I mean, would you try and get a job?
No, never.
You know,
never.
Based on that? No, huh?
Well, I mean, if it's an audition
right.
and it's a sexy role, well, then
right.
yeah, obviously, because it's for the character. But no, I would never go into
yeah.
Like, I've been on so many, like, professional interviews where, I mean,
right.
I especially if it's a woman, oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
Yeah, they wouldn't like that.
Well, even last night, I was at a really cool place called My House. It's in mm-hmm. Hollywood. It's a newer, you know, venue. And I mean, some of the girls that were, like, checking people in, they were giving me attitude.
Really?
I was like, relax, you know? Like, chill out. But, I mean, my thing is I, like, women just can be catty, and they can be really jealous. And I'm not saying I'm so hot, everybody's so jealous of me, because they're not. But I'm just mm-hmm. saying that women just automatically sometimes are like, whatever. They try to give you attitude.
Right.
It's like a fear thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I always just flip the script, and I'm just like, oh, how you doing? And
yeah.
I love your outfit. Oh, my gosh, you're so much
yeah.
prettier than me.
I guess when in doubt... Try to be conservative.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
it's always safe to err on the side of caution. So
yeah.
I'm working on it.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I've got workout clothes on today.
Yeah, there you go. We're going to call an author in a couple minutes who co-wrote the book Sex, Love, and Money, Revenge and Ruin in the World of High-Stakes Divorce. And I started reading this book, and it's pretty good. You know, it's pretty good. So we're going to talk to him about it. We're going to call... Mr. One of the co-writers, which is John Sedgwick. So let's bring him on the line. And you should definitely check this out. I mean, the things that people do to each other.
Hello?
Yes, good morning. Is this John?
Yes.
Good morning, John. This is Sam and Kira calling you from L.A. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
Wonderful. What part of the country are we calling you in?
I'm in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is well to your east.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. Is it still cold up there?
It's glorious. Every day here is about 78 degrees and cloudless.
Wow.
Unlike California, yeah, which has sucky weather, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
We're roughing it out here.
Yeah, there you go.
You get snow every other day, right?
There you go, yeah. In our dreams. John, you co-wrote the book with Gerald Nissenbaum called Sex,
yes.
Love, and Money. And I started reading this, and I was immediately grabbed by the subject matter and everything. You guys obviously concentrate on divorce and divorcing couples. And I think and the book is made up of many stories, I guess, in your experience that you put together. Tell us a little bit about how this came about.
I mean, how the book came about, or
yes.
how I wrote
yes.
it the way I did. I got to know Jerry. I'm the writer. Jerry's the lawyer in the duo who created this book. And it's about his experience as a divorce lawyer over the last 40 years.
Right.
And he has done, incredibly enough, 8,000 cases.
Mm.
Imagine, 8,000 cases. And he, when he got interested in me, he had read a book of mine. He thought that I might be a good writer for this project. He called me into his office in downtown Boston, and we talked about it. It sounded like fun. So I said, okay, and set to work. And the way it worked was that he would tell me that he would just, he has a remarkable recall. I mean, a case that happened 30 years ago might have happened this morning.
Yeah, he must have, you know, because I don't remember what I had for lunch yesterday, you know, and this is amazing.
Didn't you have the bologna sandwich?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's right. Now, you see, you remember.
Yeah, I seem to remember that from press accounts.
Yeah,
but the So in telling me the stories, he was just remarkably evocative and very precise in the details. He was a great storyteller, but even so, you know, he's a storyteller who's used to telling a story to a judge or to a jury, which is
right.
Different from telling it to readers.
Right. So you had to pretty much go through it and figure out how to put it on the paper. Had you written stuff like this before, similar things to divorce?
I've written, actually, my first book was about a real-life private eye. And as it happened, his name is Gil Lewis, and as it happened that he had done some work for Jerry way back in the 70s, so there was a weird overlap there. But I've written written a couple of novels, I've written two other works of nonfiction, and then family memoir that's six generations of my family. We have that kind of thing here in Boston.
I see. Wow.
Our ancestors go back.
Yeah. I know. There's big, long heritage back east, more than here. I did want to ask you, so divorce, let's talk a little bit about divorce.
Sure.
You know, people throw around different numbers and stuff. What is the rate that you're familiar with as far as how many marriages end in divorce today?
I believe the figure is somewhere around 43%, and that's for first marriages. It's a little higher, incredibly, for second marriages. I think that people don't learn from their mistakes.
Really?
And if you think about it, you know, cast about to consider all of the people you know, and you know, there can't be a person in America who either has not been divorced himself or knows somebody in his intimate circle who has been divorced, or parents divorced, or children divorced. Divorce is so pervasive and so destructive that, you know, it leaves its mark everywhere, all across the land. It's just, it's staggering.
Yes.
It's really staggering. And, you know, and if you read Jerry's, his accounts of, I mean, the book is about high-end divorce where there's a lot of money involved. But this is true all through the line. I mean, if whether it's high-end or low-end or in the middle, that divorce is absolutely devastating because it requires a couple to live separately as, you know, with the same income that they had previously lived together.
Right.
And as you know, I mean, that money doesn't go as so far to support two households as it did one. So it's consigning, it's pushing people down closer to the poverty level. And that alone is scary. But then you throw in all of the emotional angst and the divide, and, you know, the children's lives being disrupted, and sometimes people moving to, you know, they certainly move out of the house. Sometimes they move into another town or another state. I mean, that's incredibly disruptive, too. It's just, you know, people don't really take that tally of how hard it is on families to go through this.
Yeah, and I know I've been through a divorce mm-hmm. myself, and I can say that it's probably one of the worst thing anybody can experience. Like you said, and children as well. Everybody gets affected by this. I mean, it's not an easy thing to to ruin a family that you built for so many years and stuff and just take it apart, you know?
I feel like, especially living in Los Angeles, I feel like just the concept of marriage has been so... There's just such an erosion and a tarnish, just like what you're talking about, and everything you just so eloquently put. But I guess my question is, living out here and or even all just all over, you know, with divorce rates from what is your thought now as far as marriage goes? Like the concept, I mean, do we still believe in marriage? Do we think that it's just people aren't educated on it or people aren't taking it serious? I mean, what do you think that's kind of a proactive approach to?
Well, I don't think it's hard to think of marriage in any way except less, you know.
Right.
Marriage is not forever. I mean, people just have been around. They know that marriages break up, and that means that sometimes that they go into marriage or are in a marriage defensively, that they, you know, the wife might, you know, want to work and develop a career because if something happens to the relationship with the husband, that it, so she's protected. Well,
right.
If she's done that, that means, you know, one foot is sort of out the door already because it means that there's a division built into the household. Maybe there are separate bank accounts. It just suggests, you know, distrust that, you know, can't be good. It's tragic because, I mean, I just love marriage. I too have gone through a divorce. It's it's a bitter experience. I oddly am not soured on marriage. I'm just soured on my
on
my wife.
But, yeah.
And
funny.
She on me, I might add. and but you know, I mean, I think that the two greatest words in the English language, or two of them anyway, are husband and wife. And I just don't think that there's a reason why there's no good substitute for that. You know, partner, boyfriend, relationship. Words like that are so weak, I think, you know, compared to marriage, husband, and wife. And I think that tells you something about how we still prefer to view marriage as something solid and lasting.
Right. And you know, I mean, I think what's shocking is how people that share the same bed, the same household, would be able to turn on each other so much when it comes to divorce. I guess you guys have probably seen some of the worst in people when they go through a divorce.
Well, it's just staggering what people will do. There's a little anecdote that begins the book that I'll tell you very briefly, which is, you know, guy comes home and sees that it's a townhouse in Boston. He goes in the door up the stairs and sees that there is absolutely nothing there. There's not a stick of furniture in the place. There's nothing on the walls. Even the rugs are gone. He looks in his bedroom. All of the bedding is taken out off the beds, and the bed itself is removed. And he goes into the closet. All of his clothes are gone. Goes into the kitchen. All the pots and pans are gone. The whole thing has been stripped clean. And his wife clearly has left him. Well, what does he do?
Cleared out all the bank accounts as well, right?
Yeah, and he drained the bank accounts. Yeah, that she has it. And so, but one thing she's left is a spaghetti pot that's in the front hall, and in the spaghetti pot is a penny. She has left him with a penny and a pot to piss in.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Seriously, and just think of all the sort of mental energy and creativity and malice that went into doing that.
Right.
Yeah?
Yes.
I mean, what an elaborate thing to do to really stick it to your ex, and how much anger there must be.
Right.
Well, that anger and all of that emotion, you know, runs right through this book. It's just astonishing the length to which people will go to register their displeasure at their spouse, and vice versa.
Right. Yeah.
Wow, it's so interesting.
It really is, you know, and there are some stories in the book, I think, that even hard to believe that people would pull things like this, you know, but they do. Now, is there a difference between the, well, obviously there must be, you know, when you talk about high-stake divorce and when there's a lot of money involved and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you find that, I mean, Do you advocate like prenuptial agreements and things like that after what you've seen?
Yeah. I mean, I think that that avoids a lot of the trouble later on. On the other hand, it does, you know, indicate some distrust that, going into the marriage. But, you know, in this day and age, as you've said, that it is that's simply realistic. Mm-hmm. You know, if nearly half the marriages are going to end in divorce, that means that yours might too. And that you would save yourself a lot of grief if you specify at the beginning how are you going to deal with the assets at the end.
Right, yeah. And, yeah, because I always thought about this, you know, not getting divorced and doing a prenup. But the fact that, you know, it should, I mean, it's a very real thing, divorce. And you always want to think about it in advance. And because otherwise, like you said, you know, then things get really complicated.
Well, let me ask you this. I've seen it out here in the crazy world we live in, that prenups have not necessarily are not advantageous anymore. Like, what I'm saying is a lot of women, you know, they want the prenup because they get some contractual agreements and money XYZ is paid out, and it's kind of like a business deal.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's also not all like, you know, get it, you get
that's
more.
That's right. Yeah, no, I think that's right. It's like, that this will be my reward for leaving him after 2 years. This will be my reward for leaving him after 5 years.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just like the assumption is you're going to leave.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think that's so cynical. And, you know, where is the romance in that? And where is the trust? I mean, that surely that a marriage has to be based on the trust and some belief that you're in it for the long haul.
Right.
Yeah.
Except we see that the results are different once people, you know, I mean, what strikes me about the book, and we just discussed an example of this, is it's not like people will just leave and try to get their, you know, equitable part of the money, but some of them actually take revenge against the spouse.
Right. Well, see, that's the thing about marriage, that is that it's a little cauldron of emotion. You know, it's not like a business deal where you can just walk away and take your money and be done with it. That there's anger, there's bitterness, there's, you know, shattered dreams, there's spite, there's, you know, one side might have behaved badly, the other side is angry about that. You know, there's just a lot going on emotionally, and then that spills over into the way the divorce is handled. And often, and you know, the divorce, a divorce court, it's like the last place you want to work out some emotional difficulties, because they will just make those emotional difficulties worse.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, I mean, I went through a year-long divorce, matter about nothing, you know, and that it just, everything in law, in the divorce setting, gets amplified. It takes a lot of time to work this out. There's all this search for evidence. There's the anguish of having to produce and examine documents after documents. You know, all of this stuff just is, you know, it comes out of this desire for revenge, but it won't actually get you any satisfaction. Mm. It'll just hurt you too.
I've heard it said that people would rather be angry than neutral, because in anger there's still passion. There's still I care enough to be hateful towards you.
I
don't want to be amicable and neutral, because it's kind of placid. It's kind of like we don't have enough passion for one another anymore to even fight with each other, as opposed to I'm going to get you. I'm obsessed about you. I'm going to freaking give it to you. It's like there's passion, and I think that's probably a lot of what you're seeing is people that
are... Well, and also but it's usually an asymmetry of passion. I mean, if both sides can be roused that way, then the marriage still has a lot of life to it. But if it's
true.
Just one side and the other side is that's all riled up, and the other side is like, That's when it's done. And that's also what makes it so difficult, is that one side usually feels a lot stronger than the other.
Mm.
And that in order to, you know, and then is determined to seek justice, or quote-unquote justice, through the legal system, and is pushing and pushing and pushing for this legal result that is just going to bankrupt them both.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, yeah, I know. Well, a fascinating book, Sex, Love, and Money. And we're talking to John Sedgwick. When did the book come out? Is it recent?
It's been out for a couple of weeks now. Available wherever fine literature is sold, and other places too.
Well, very well. Congratulations on the book, John. You've been a lot of fun, and all the best.
Thanks, John.
Thank you very much. Okay. Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye. Very nice guy. I like when they take their time and, you know, they're, like, really into it. You know, not all people are into the interviews, you know.
Yeah, no, he's cool.
Yeah.
He's a cool dude.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm definitely going to read some more of this book. I mean, it reads like fiction, but it's not, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to actually look at it as
I mean, that thing with the penny in the pot to piss in, man.
That's crazy. You know, I went through, my mom has been married 6 times.
Really?
Yes. Now, I didn't live with her for most of those marriages, and nor have I met all those stepdads.
Really?
Thank you, Lord.
Wow.
Yeah, because I don't.
But she hasn't learned after 6 times.
No, I don't think she's mentally all the way there, so I think that's kind of her issue. But no, it's funny. But she's been through that, and then I lived with my dad, and he went through a few different relationships, and one was a marriage and divorce when I was living with him, and his ex-wife was having an affair. And I watched him kind of get obsessive about trying to catch her. So he actually rigged and tapped our phone lines, and he put in recording devices.
Really?
And she, like, left one time and didn't come back for a month. And she came back one day, and he wasn't there. And I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. I was like, something's going to go down. I just tried to act like I didn't know anything. I tried to act like I didn't, you know, whatever. She came home that day. Of all days, she's been gone for a month, and there's a clicking noise, click, 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 and she's like, what is that? And she's listening, and I'm like, oh my gosh, my dad's recording device was full, and it was clicking because it was full, he had to replace the tape, so she goes through the whole house looking for this thing, she finds the tape device, and she just ransacks, I mean, she gets mad, she's tearing apart the desk, she's tearing apart the phone, she's ripping apart this tape.
Wow.
Meanwhile, my dad doesn't know what's going on, he's not even home at the moment, and I'm sitting here going, like, in a corner, like, rocking myself, I'm like, hey, it's gonna be okay, but it's crazy, man.
Yeah.
Crazy, because it's just
the shit that people do, and, you know, how people use their kids also against each other and stuff.
It's just a really, it's never clean. It's never like a break,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's not pretty, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to LA Talk Radio Channel 1. Call in 9323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815.
What you do is a good thing. Working from your side. on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Now let's get back to Sam in the Morning right here on LA Talk Radio.
How are you doing, Kara?
Oh, man, I'm rocking and rolling.
Yes?
I'm so ready to never be divorced. Just not do it.
Yeah. No, I mean, especially you believe in marriage and everything. You better do it right the first time.
Yeah, I just, I don't want to do it. I don't think anybody wants to, but, you know, I definitely think there is a mentality, and I'll be honest, that we live in a culture that there's always an out.
Yeah.
You can get out of anything.
But you know what, though? If you're stuck with someone you're not happy with, you know, don't you think you should have that option to move on?
Well, yeah, but I also think people need to have the idea that when you get married, it's a covenant. It's not just a, I'm going to do it till it doesn't feel good anymore.
Right, but
it's
you can make mistakes if you pick the wrong person and you find out later.
Everybody
you know?
Makes mistakes, but I think that's why that's something you need to take very, very carefully and like just feel the weight of it. And then you make a commitment. I mean, this is from somebody that has had no experience, so I say that, you know, other than being a child of, you know, tons of divorces.
Yeah.
Is my mom's hobby. But no, yeah, she got married seven times or six times. But basically, I just really think that people just look at it like, you know what? It's just a new flavor. I can get out of it when I'm done with it. I'm sick of it. I want something new. He doesn't love me anymore. I don't love him anymore. You know, just you gotta put some work into it. And I think people don't know
how. You do.
If it's abuse, if it's infidelity, those are different situations.
Right.
You know what I mean? But if it's something where it's just, we just don't feel it anymore. Well, freaking work on it, you know? Get some work, get some help. I mean, it's...
Okay. Well, after you've been married for 10 years, come back and we'll talk about it.
Well, then don't ask me, Sam. I'm just telling you.
All right. Well, let's bring in our guest. Good morning to you.
Hi, Sam.
And we have Nancy in the studio, of course. And you contacted me because you wrote a book. And so tell us a little bit about it. What's the book called?
The book is called How to Avoid, Handle, and Litigate Over Sexual Harassment.
Oh, that's a long title, but you managed to remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did this book come about?
I had an acting career for 14 years, and for 12 years I was on General Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And the stage manager of that show was a sexual harasser. He molested women, threatened their jobs, raped women. I mean, he just ran the gamut, whatever qualified.
Really? And was getting away with it?
Oh, yes. 15 years.
Really?
Yeah.
15 years?
Yeah.
Nobody said a word.
Oh, no. Everyone complained. Lots and lots of people complained. Yeah, I went to the union for the 12 years I was on the show, over and over again to the set representative. Everybody knew what he was doing. Nobody did anything about it.
Wow.
When I sued, I actually had three lawsuits. Well, I'll go back to the beginning. A girlfriend of mine on the show was attacked by him in the dressing room one day.
Mm-hmm.
She was in a dressing room by herself. He never knocked before he went into women's dressing rooms. He just barged in case he could find somebody naked.
Yeah.
And he found her in there alone, and he told her to give him oral sex, and she refused. So he grabbed her head and forced her head down to try and give him oral sex.
Yeah. Wow.
And injured her neck in the process, and so she... got a lawyer and sued the network. And when she told me about that, I offered to testify in court with her because he had harassed me for many, many years, too.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, I met her attorney. And when her attorney settled her case, he asked me if I wanted to sue.
Right.
And I felt like if I didn't do that, it was like condoning what he had done for so long.
Right, right.
So I wanted to hold somebody responsible for what he had done. So I sued the network, the union, and him.
Mm.
Wow.
So he harassed you for a long time, you said?
Oh, yeah, 12 years.
And what does that mean?
He would ogle me, stare at my breasts, tell me about his great sexual prowess, proposition me. He molested me. When I threatened to have a boyfriend come and take him out if he didn't leave me alone, he had me bounced off the show for a year.
Really?
Yeah. What constitutes sexual harassment? Pardon me. In the by law, this guy did all of those things and invented some new ones. I mean, he was really a piece of work.
Really?
Can I ask, when you say molested, is that like a physical touching type?
Yeah, he grabbed my breasts on the set once.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He did that kind of thing to everybody. It really has nothing to do with what you look like.
Yeah.
He went after women who were, you know, old, young, fat, thin, tall, short, black and white, pregnant women. No one was safe.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how did, obviously he had to be in a very powerful position to be able to get away with this for so long.
He was stage manager, which meant that he was over the extras and under five.
Oh, just
the
stage manager.
Parts.
I thought maybe like a producer or something, you know.
No, the executive producer was Gloria Monty, and when we were suing ABC, my attorney talked to Gloria, and she said, yeah, she knew what was going on, but she didn't, since it wasn't happening to her principals, she didn't think it was that important, so she didn't do anything.
Wow. So, so during all this time, did you actually go and report this, or did you just wait and went from the harassment to a lawsuit?
Oh, no, no. I reported it to the set representative at least 6 times in 12 years, twice in person, twice on the phone, and twice in letters.
Mm.
When we sued the union, at first they claimed they didn't have to do anything because it wasn't in their bylaws.
Mm.
But it turned out they had a whole file full of complaints against this guy.
Really?
That they had done nothing about.
It's just so hard to understand because this is California, and there's just such a heightened, I feel like such a heightened awareness that you think, if even the suspect of somebody like that on working under you, with you, around you, that it would be such bad business climate that they would oust them right away. So it's like, how does somebody retain somebody for 12, 13 years or longer, and with all that history, you know what I mean, of complaints, and they just keep, you know, oh, we don't have to, you know, we have to do anything about it. It's kind of...
Yeah, no, it was almost a conspiracy to keep him there. Because, as I said, Gloria Monty knew what was going on. She didn't care as long as it wasn't happening to her principals. The casting directors were male, gay male casting directors. They were harassing the men on the show.
Really?
So, yeah, and the stage manager knew what they were doing. They knew what he was doing, and they were covering for each other.
Yeah, so it was sort of like an environment where it wasn't, let's say, encouraged, but allowed.
Right.
Really?
Right. Well, it's in some circles in show business, it's considered a perk.
Really?
You know, and actors are so threatened that they're not going to report it because they're threatened with never working again. He used to say to me, I could see to it you never work in this industry again.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, right. Like you've got that power.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, who knows, you know? I mean, they can go out there and badmouth you until they're blue in the face,
you know? That's how he got me off the show for a year. And during that year, he was reported for sexual harassment. The legal department investigated, in quotes, investigated him. And what they told me was they brought in a cross-section of women who had done the show to question, to ask if they had ever been sexually harassed by the guy. And they said some of the women had admitted to it. Yes, they had been sexually harassed. But no one was willing to sign anything, a document saying that they had been harassed so that they could fire him.
Right.
So they had to allow him to continue to be there. Now, my first question was, why didn't you bring me in?
Mm-hmm.
Because I was never brought in during that time, and I would have signed anything.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we didn't know you had done the show. I said, at that point, I had done the show 9 years. How can you not know I had done the show? You know, everybody knew me. And they said, well, we just took people at random from the casting files. What he had done, the harasser, was go to the casting office when I had told him I was going to have a boyfriend come and, you know,
take care of him.
What I said was, break your legs if you don't leave me alone. He went to the casting office and told them some lies, you know, she's a problem on the set, yada, yada, and got them to take me out of their casting files. So when he was reported sometime after that and they started this investigation, I was not in the casting files.
Mm.
So the thing is, when I sued ABC, they claimed nobody knew that this was going on.
Really?
Everybody knew. My God, they did an investigation for a year on the guy. They just, it was a conspiracy to let the guy just continue to
Because they knew they'd get in big trouble if they admitted this, right?
Yeah,
right.
They can't own up to that. So how did, so you started these lawsuits, and how long were those, was that
it
process?
It takes about a year. Yeah, it's, legal wheels turn slowly. It took about a year. I sued, ABC claimed no one knew. There were certain people who were told not to talk to my lawyer, or their jobs were at stake. I sued the union. They claimed it was not their responsibility to do anything.
Right.
Even though when you're an actor and you join the union, the first thing you have to do is go to a meeting where there's like this big roundtable meeting where they tell you, we're your union. We're there for you. If you have a problem on the set, come to us. We're there for you.
Mm.
This is, when I sued them, they said, this isn't a working condition. excuse me?
Yeah.
Sexual harassment on the set, being molested, but some women being raped, is not a working condition?
Wow.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
And now, by the way, it is on their bylaws.
Really?
Because of the lawsuits. And I sued him, and he actually, when he did that to the lady I mentioned earlier, when he tried to force her to have sex with him, she did get a lawyer. He did get fired, and he kept insisting he was innocent. Mm-hmm. And he actually had an arbitration hearing. His union was the Directors Guild. The Directors Guild had to represent him because it's in their bylaws, I guess.
Uh-huh.
So they gave him a lawyer, and for the better part of a year they had an arbitration hearing. He wanted to get his job back. He was claiming he was innocent. They brought in 24 women, I believe, is what ABC Legal told me. I was one of the women to testify against him.
And 24 women, and they could still say that they didn't know about this,
uh-huh.
and that he's and he can go ahead and deny this. And,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I testified against him, and what I was told by the lawyers later was everything that I had said in my testimony, everyone else had said too. He had been doing the same thing to everybody.
Really?
Yeah. And the word I got was at the end of his arbitration hearing that the lawyer from from the Directors Guild actually dropped him as a client because he said, I can't represent this guy. He's just too guilty.
Yeah.
So he never got his job back. And he has worked probably within the industry a little bit since then, but he was close to retirement anyway.
Right.
But he's never been able to do that show again.
So. Right, right. And so it's probably ridiculous to say that the women invite this. Obviously,
oh, no,
right?
No. It's never about invitation. You can be, you know, as gorgeous and sexy as you can be. It doesn't matter what you look like. It's about
right.
victimization.
Right, right.
It's about somebody seeing somebody else and saying, I can make a victim of them. I'm going to, you know, it's
like
bullying.
Power, like it's a power
it's
thing.
It's a power abuse thing, exactly.
Yeah.
It's
right.
about imposing your will. Right, exactly.
Yeah, and usually people mix up sex and power together, you know, and I think... like you're right, I think it's prevalent in this town quite a bit, you know, and because of the nature of the industry and the fact that people do want to grow and become big, and then they're afraid somebody's going to stand in their way, you
right,
know.
Right.
It's definitely interesting how you become desensitized,
yeah,
I think,
yeah.
And it's just interesting in listening to you because I've worked in a lot of environments where it's not been outright blatant, you know, but
yeah.
it's been like... remarks or little comments or kind of a tone that
right.
is, especially because I've worked in sales too, which is extremely male dominated.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you just learn to kind of brush it off or make a joke about it. And
right.
you know what I mean? Or like
right.
try not to engage in it. But it's like a tone of like, we have the right to be playful in this
right.
area. We
yeah.
have the right to make comments because, you know, it's LA or it's a male's club and you're lucky you're here.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
It's kind of an interesting desensitization that happens.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, it's like tap dancing in a minefield.
Mm.
I mean, you've got to try and sidestep it, but you can't entirely. But you want to put yourself in denial because you don't want to believe this is happening to you. You don't want to lose your job. There's a lot of gray areas in there that you have to, you know, manipulate and handle to
yeah.
to just endure it and get through.
So,
yeah. Just like abused women and stuff, you know, that can't leave the marriage or the relationship because there's too much, like, intimidation and you know, and things like that. So, so people, you know, even though they're abused, they stay, you know, because it's hard for us to understand why you would stay in that situation if it was so uncomfortable for you.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, that's why I wrote this book. The statistics that I got said that 98% of women are sexually harassed on the job and 2% of men. The
wow,
thing
are
is
you serious?
That, yeah,
98%?
98%.
Wow.
When I originally wrote this book, back in the 90s, actually, when I had just gone through the lawsuits, I called it How to Avoid, Handle, and Litigate Over Sexual Harassment in Hollywood.
Mm.
And I tried to get it to publishers, and publishers said that's too narrow. There wouldn't
mm-hmm.
be enough of a readership for that.
Right.
So I took the in Hollywood out of it, and I started to write down stories of sexual harassment in other areas that I had experienced.
Right.
I tried to remember how many different lines of work I had been in over the years. I came up with 24 different lines of work that I had been in, and I had been sexually harassed in most, if not all, of them.
Really?
As a secretary, waitress, switchboard operator, sales girl, you name it, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
And when I got through these lawsuits, I learned so much about the law and about sexual harassment that I said, people should know this information. I mean, so many people don't even know what constitutes harassment.
Right,
you know?
Right. So, I mean, would you say today with more awareness and companies sending people for training and stuff on sexual harassment, do you think that it has diminished somewhat?
No. Bullies,
no, huh?
Bullies will always be out there.
Really?
Yeah. People who want to abuse power will always be out there.
Yeah.
And in show business especially, it's considered a perk.
Yeah.
I've been harassed. I did all the local soaps in Los Angeles, Days of Our Lives, General Hospital, and Young and Restless. I was sexually harassed on all the shows.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
By a producer on one, a casting director on one, and a stage manager on one.
Wow.
It's everywhere. And, you know, not just in show business, but certainly the casting couch lives, unfortunately.
Right, right. Now, so let's talk a little bit about prevention or what someone should do. Let's say someone is harassed and everything. I mean, is the first thing you do go for a lawsuit, or are there other steps you need to take before that?
No, the last thing you do is go for a lawsuit. You have to protect yourself first. You have to do everything you can first and then do a lawsuit. Because if you just go for a lawsuit first, you won't have what you need to go to court with. So you need to plan it first. As a secretary, I would... you need to keep like a list, almost like a diary. Every time you're sexually harassed, you have to write it down. Make sure you note what time it was, if anyone else was around to see or hear it, what happened, and especially how it made you feel, because you're going to be asked that in court. The very first thing you have to do when you're harassed is you have to tell the harasser to stop.
Right.
Because when you go to court and you're in the witness box, they're going to say to you, did you tell the guy to stop?
Mm.
And if you can't say yes, then it's almost like you allowed it sort of thing. You know?
Right.
Yeah. So first you have to tell them to stop. It's been my experience they won't take that seriously, but at least you can say you told them to stop.
Right.
Then, actually, when I was on the set, I got to the point where I carried around a little handheld tape recorder, one of those little mini tape recorders,
mm-hmm.
every time I was anywhere near the stage manager. So it kept his mouth shut.
Really?
He wouldn't say anything when I had this tape recorder there. And he couldn't force me to stop using that, because if he had said, you can't have that on the set, my first comment would have been, I'd be happy to go to Gloria Monty and tell her why I need it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I carried that. It's not a bad idea to have a tape recorder if you can. I mean, people have them on their cell phones now, you know?
That's
just
true.
Make sure it's turned on when the harasser is near you.
Yeah.
Make sure that you don't get physically close to the harasser if it's someone who has a history of touching you, because you just want to stay out of the way, you know? I used to be a loan processor at a mortgage company in Agoura, and my boss was actually the owner's son-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he was employed, I'm sure. And every time he would announce that he was a misogynist. He was proud of it.
Mm.
And whenever I would have to take papers to him to sign or look over, what have you, he would try to elbow me in the breast. I'd be sitting at my desk, and he'd come over to me to give me work, and he would try to lean into me, his lower torso, so I would have to feel him.
Mm.
I mean, it was disgusting.
Yeah.
You know? And so I got to the point where whenever he would come over to my desk, I would lean far over to the right so he couldn't push himself against me. You have to just learn how to sort of dance around it and stay away from them as much as possible. Don't allow yourself to be in a position where you're alone with them, if possible. If it's your boss, you can report them to their boss, but if your boss is the owner of the company, then what you do is you go to the Office of Employment Fair Housing, because that's the first person you report it to.
Yeah. Wow. Have you ever been sexually harassed?
You know, as she's sitting here saying this, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's that. That's what I'm saying, desensitized. I mean, I don't know about that's such a it is a label to use it. It's to say that you were sexually harassed is labeling a person or the situation. So I definitely feel like I've experienced a lot of not so much in a professional manner. I have a little bit, but more so like even in circles of I've run in with friends or comedians and things like that, because I do comedy as well. And just kind of a tone, and I feel like sex is the vehicle, but the motivation is power and intimidation.
Exactly.
And it's like, I feel like being a strong woman, I mean, that'll just piss a man off sometimes. I mean, I'm not trying to be a man, I'm not a feminazi, but just being a strong woman, I sometimes get, I had like a, this is kind of weird, but a friend of a friend, well, actually it was a friend of mine, you know, he's made a couple comments to me, like, and the tone of his comments were like, yeah, just da-da-da-da-da. It was almost like and he was saying something about my body or something, and it was kind of like, it's a joke, but I really mean it, and I'm really pissed at you.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do sexually, even though it was about my body. It was kind of like, put me in my place, you know, put you in your place.
Yeah.
And I've experienced, and it's always from left field, because I look at it like, you know, we're peers, we're on the same damn page, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so, but I start to realize, he feels threatened right now by me. And this is his way to kind of, quote unquote, put me in my place, is to bring up my femininity or my sexuality and then say something derogatory or in a downward slant.
As a put down,
As a put down, you know, and you know, and so it's really...
Well, on a job, you should be allowed, at the very least, your dignity.
Yeah.
You know, you should be given, at the very least, respect as a human being. Human respect that you would expect anywhere.
Yeah.
You know? And if you are having that taken away from you, you are being harassed.
Yeah, and I would agree. A lot of the examples I'm thinking of are not so much in the workplace. There's been a few things, but I've addressed it. Like, I was working in Detroit, and I was working in sales, and, you know, the sales staff, the sales manager and everything, like, they would make comments, and I'm funny, and I have a different tolerance that doesn't offend me, but then it goes to a place where I'm like, especially at work, I mean, they made a comment, I overheard him and another guy making a comment about me, my body, and it was just like, something hit me that day where I was like, I get it, but this is where I work. Yeah. And I don't have to play with this. And so I took him aside, and I was like, look.
You should tell him.
I said, look. I said, here's the deal. I don't care what your opinion is of me. I just don't even want to know your opinion. I don't have to come to work and deal with your opinion.
Yeah.
This is where I work. If you want to make this an issue, and I did say I could take it to a legal, we could take this in a legal manner if you'd like, but I don't have to come here and listen, and you need to take this serious, you know. And, you know, he did, and he actually talked to the guy, and they, you know, worked it out. But, you know, I think some people take, like, a sense of humor and playfulness sometimes too far, and they think, we're going to push the boundaries to see how far we can go with this. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
Especially in male-dominated. I'm not saying women don't do it to men.
Right.
I think that they do, too. But I'm just saying I think male-dominated industries, you see a lot of that. And, you know, like you said, sidestepping, trying to work with it sometimes. And then sometimes you just can't. You're like, okay.
Yeah,
you know, enough is enough. But it's never been to the degree, I think, where you're talking, where you've been touched or propositioned. I've never had that. It's just more of a tone.
It can happen in more subtle ways, too. I was working at a computer company, sort of. I was a technical writer, but I was also doing admin for the head of IT. And I was sitting in an area that was large with a lot of people at desks and stuff, and there were a bunch of offices against the wall. And one of the offices against the wall, there was a salesman, a male sales guy, who always kept his door open, had a big mouth. You could hear him all over the floor. And he was trying to, I guess, get a sale with some woman client or something, wasn't getting anywhere with her, hung up the phone. And he came out and he said to some guy at a desk right outside his office door, he said, "She must be on the rag." And I just went, "Excuse me," you know. And I reported him to my boss for because that constitutes sexual harassment too.
Really?
Yeah.
Sexual harassment is not just touching or looking at somebody's body or making comments about their body or something. It can also be creating an unpleasant atmosphere in
the
office.
Right, where you're very uncomfortable and feel intimidated.
But I think women are just taught to deal with it. And I think that's what's interesting hearing what you're saying is, like, you're taught to kind of tough it out. You're taught to kind of, like, brush it off and not... You know what I mean? So it's interesting to kind of bring a light. It's weird to have to actually say, wait a minute, I do feel uncomfortable, and we really do need to redefine boundaries, and I really do need to know that I don't have to experience this at work.
Right.
And it's interesting that we even have to say that, but it's like, I think women are conditioned, you know?
Yeah.
I think especially, but I mean, I've experienced, you know, just being like a certain body type that I've gotten, people think there's just so many different stigmas attached to it that they think that you, she'll be cool with this. You know what I mean? Should be cool with that.
If you choose not to be offended and you choose not to take it seriously, then it's not harassment. It's in the eye of the beholder. If you're offended by it, if you're threatened by it, if you're put off by it, it's harassment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But some people will say, "Oh, no problem." You know, if it doesn't bother them, hey, good for you.
Yeah.
You know? But it bothers me. Don't do that to me.
Yeah. And then that goes back to your first step, which is telling them to stop. Because some of that stuff is subjective. Some of it is like, hey, they didn't mean it to be offensive, or maybe to them it's playful or it wasn't meant that way.
Right.
But yet the person receiving it is like, no, I feel violated or uncomfortable.
Yes.
And if that conversation is never had, then you can't really hold that person accountable. Right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't tell them to stop, they don't know they've offended you.
Right. Like, I offended a girl I was just doing a sales job with. I offended her because I do a lot of different characters and voices, and I use this voice that's like Ghetto Fabulous, and it's a character I do. And I did it around a bunch of people, and she's African-American, had nothing to do with her.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with her. But it just so happened she was in the room, and she thought it was directed towards her, so she took me aside and told me exactly how she felt. I felt awful, and I said, listen, I'm totally sorry. Had nothing to do with you, and I'll make sure to make a conscious effort not to, you know, do that around you, because it's not, you know, I don't want you to feel uncomfortable at work.
Right.
I mean, of course, I do think it was a little bit like she was reading into it, but at the same time, I was going to respect the fact that she felt this way.
Right.
And she needed to tell, and she did. She took me aside. She told me, and it was done. It was done.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things. Because you're at work. It's a different ball game. I'm not on stage. I'm not, you know, entertaining people at a comedy show. I'm, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. And you're talking here about men with a sense of entitlement, you know, you know, believing they can intimidate women into doing what they want them to do and so forth. Now, so did you end up winning your lawsuit?
Yeah. The attorney claimed we can't say that we won. They settled out of court in my favor.
Mm.
I did not want to settle out of court. The attorney, that's something else I go into in the book. If you do decide that you've done everything you can do, nothing is improving, and you're really tired of it and you want to bring a lawsuit, please check out your lawyer first, because if your lawyer sells you out, then where are you? You know, you have to check and find out with the Bar Association if there have been any complaints about the lawyer by anybody before. If you can get names of any previous clients and check with them, how was he to you?
Right.
I wish I had done that, because when the girl before me who sued and I offered to testify in court for her, he settled her case out of court also for six figures. Then he turned around and said, do you want me to represent you? Well, that is technically soliciting a client, and that is, if it's not illegal, it's immoral.
Really?
Yeah, and I didn't know that at the time. I found out later. But when we were going through the lawsuits, as they dragged on, there were times when he said he wouldn't talk to people who I knew had information would prove our case. He encouraged me to go on a lot of talk shows. I went on Geraldo and A Current Affair and Montel Williams and all this talking about the cases, because he said it would get us publicity that would bring women out to go to court with us, to testify in court with us, which it did. But when it came down to going to court, suddenly he had all these excuses for why we couldn't go to court. Well, we don't have enough and yada, yada, yada. I said, what about all these women who came out to testify with us? No, 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 we can't go to court. I found out the guy was just, he was all about getting quick out of court settlements.
Yeah.
If I had known that, you know. And something else I didn't know was, when I took him on as a lawyer, I had to sign a piece of paper that said if I decided to drop him as a lawyer, fire him, I had to pay his legal expenses. Well, I had no money at the time, so I couldn't do that. What I didn't know, and certainly what he wasn't likely to tell me, was I didn't have to fire him. I could hire someone else at the same time as an attorney. I would have had to split anything three ways, but still I could have had a better lawyer who would have finished the job type thing. So, you know, you have options.
You
have to know what they are.
You can't object and say, no, we're not. I mean, you're the client. You can't say, no, we're not going to settle out. We're going to court.
Oh, yeah. I fought with him.
But you're hiring him, so doesn't he work for you?
Theoretically, yes.
So if he says, we're going to settle, you go, no, I'm not accepting that. We're going to court. Doesn't he just shut up and go to court?
No.
Oh, okay. It doesn't work that way. Good to know.
He kept saying, this is the best settlement agreement that I can get. You have to sign it. You have to sign it. And I kept saying, I don't have to sign anything. You know, this is the settlement agreement actually blacklisted me from ever getting work on that network again. And I said I would be insane to sign something like that. I'm an actress. I'm cutting off, you know, one source of income, one of the three big networks. I can't sign this. No, no, this is the best I can get for you. You have to sign it. You have to sign it. We argued. We went three rounds. I mean, for a half a day. Yeah. And I finally said, all right, I'm not getting anywhere with this guy. I can't fire him because I can't pay his legal fees. Little did I know that I could have hired somebody else. But at the time, of course, my ignorance cost me. So I finally said to him, okay, I will very reluctantly sign this on one condition. You make sure that you let ABC know that I am signing this under duress. I feel like I am being forced to sign something that is not in my best interest, yeah. and I want them to know it. And he said, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, right, I'll let them know, you know. Yeah, oh, sure.
Yeah, right, yeah.
He didn't tell them that, not that they would have cared.
Yeah.
Mm. As a friend of mine used to say, I got screwed without being kissed. I didn't go into this for money. I mean, a lot of people, especially the attorneys for the other side, were saying, oh, it's all about the money and she's greedy and yada, yada. No, I was holding people responsible for what they did, that nobody held them responsible mm-hmm. for all those years. I didn't get much money. I got a pittance, actually. The network and the union went in together on a small settlement amount.
Really?
And the harasser claimed poverty after he had spent years bragging about his horse breeding ranch and all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and the attorney refused to do any investigation of his financial situation because he said he hadn't gotten any money yet, so he wasn't going to do this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah.
Didn't talk to all kinds of people. I mean, it was, you know, as I said, make sure you know who your lawyer is and what their background is, if there have been any complaints about them, if any previous clients were really happy with them or not. You know, research your lawyer before you just don't take anybody.
Yeah, yeah. Well, great advice. Great advice.
I have a lot of advice in this book. What constitutes this book is you will find listed in there pretty much everything that qualifies as sexual harassment, lest there be any questions as to what exactly sexual harassment is. There's a lot in there about what the laws are regarding sexual harassment, so you know what your rights are. And you'll also get a pep talk. I mean, I talk to people like a Dutch uncle and tell them, listen, this is how it is. This is what you have to do to protect yourself. Don't be afraid to. And I also made it an entertaining read. I've got some stories in there that are actually kind of amusing. So it's not very dry and depressing. It's actually kind of funny in places.
Sounds good. And when did you write the book? Is that pretty recent?
I originally wrote the book right after I had gone through the lawsuits.
Uh-huh.
And then I left it there for years, actually. And then recently I said, you know, I'll bet you the laws have changed. And I updated the book. I did some rewrites on it. I added material to it because I had more stories to put in it. And then I tried to get it out as an ebook, and it was accepted immediately by BookLocker. The email I got from the woman in charge of BookLocker actually said, I wish there'd been a book like this around when I was young.
Really?
So, yeah. So it's got good information in it, and it's an entertaining read. You know?
Sounds like it's really helpful.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Nancy, what is your last name again? I forgot.
Perry. P as in Peter, A-R-R-Y.
Right. Nancy Perry. And give the name of your book again.
How to Avoid, Handle, Litigate Over Sexual Harassment.
Sounds
if
good.
If you go up on BookLocker and go into the search area, just type in sexual harassment, and it'll bring up a page with sexual harassment books that BookLocker has. Mine will be on there. You'll see it.
I see. Wonderful.
It's 97 pages. It's only $10. I mean, uh-huh. it is so worth it. What I say is don't go to your job another day without having this book.
Yeah.
Because this is your protection.
Definitely. Definitely. You know, and I think it's a very real thing, you know, that's still happening all the time, like you said, you know?
Yeah, a friend of mine who is actually a career counselor at a college keeps telling me every judge and every lawyer should have to read this book.
Yeah,
I agree. Let's get it out to them.
Yeah. All right, Nancy Perry, thank you so much for joining us. You've been very interesting and entertaining. And we're going to take a break. We'll be back right after.
On your computer, on your Wi-Fi radio, on your iPhone. Commercial-free, original talk. Only on LA Talk Radio. Your favorite talk station.
Hey! Nancy's joining me because the message this evening is not my message, but ours. Despite our best efforts, shortages of marijuana are now being reported. From the early days of our administration, Nancy has been using marijuana on a daily basis, and her personal observations and efforts have given her such dramatic insights that I wanted her to share them with you this evening.
I yearn to find a way to help share the message that drugs open your eyes to life, to see it in the vivid colors that God gave us.
And drug abuse is not a crime. And in the most important area, individual use, we see progress. The U.S. military has more than tripled the use of drugs among its personnel since 1980. And there's one more thing. Nancy and I are hooked on heroin. Our goal is to expand drug trafficking at all levels of government and in the private sector. Help us.
Let's get back. Let's get back to Sam in the Morning, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, get down.
Woo-woo! Well, this has been an up morning, man. We've been talking about... We've got, you know, we had sex, love, and money, and then we just talked about sexual harassment.
I know, divorce and sexual harassment.
I mean,
wow.
We're on a
what
roll.
What a bright morning.
We're on a roll. So I plan on not getting divorced and not being sexually harassed. Those
there
are my
you
two,
go.
Those are my two things for today. My to-not-do list.
Yeah. You know, and she mentioned something about men being harassed, or you said something as well.
Yeah.
And it's probably by men as well, you know. It's not like, I don't think women sexually harass men.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past them, but I don't think it's typically, I don't think it's normative.
Yeah.
It's not what you're going to hear about, or it's not normative, but I definitely believe
it's just like rape, you know. I mean, it's something that men do, you know.
It's an interesting topic. Like, you know, there's those teachers, that teacher that was, you know, she got impregnated.
That's true.
Twice.
That's true. There
by
were
the same
a couple
student.
Teachers
he was like
that.
12 years old or something like that.
Yeah.
12, 13, already rocking a mustache, and she was ready
13,
to go.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, so I don't know, and they thought that, you know, the laws were partisan and it towards men and not towards women, and so it's like, or vice versa, and that had it been a situation with a man teacher with a girl,
right,
there would have been a pretty severe,
severe
punishment, and yet she still had punishment, but it wasn't, you know.
But they know that every man's dream, every boy's dream is to be seduced by their teacher, for crying out loud.
But
you
is
know?
That, hold on, is that the dream when you're 13 or when you're like 45?
Yeah, when you're 13
when
and
you're 45.
45.
Yeah, right. Then you look back and you're like, man, that teacher was hot.
Yeah, and you can masturbate to that. To
great,
those
Sam. Great. Everybody knows what Sam's thinking about.
Exactly. I think about my teachers from second
really?
Grade. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. I'm like, do you really?
But no, I always fantasized when I was in school.
When
I always fantasized about some cute teachers, yeah.
Was a child, like as a kid, like 10, 11, 12?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. No, I developed very early. I mean, listeners will know that I used to play doctor when I was 3 or 4 years old already, you know?
Really?
With the girls in the neighborhood all the time. Are you kidding? Yeah.
You had a little free clinic going on?
A little free clinic, and I had no assistants at the time.
That's funny. Funny.
Yeah, so I developed sexually very early as far as interest and curiosity and things like that, you know.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, so I would, definitely fantasize about my teachers.
So you're like, you just don't have a whole lot of sympathy for, like, the 12-year-old who impregnated the teacher.
Well, I think most guys will tell you that, you know, although when you really look at it, you know, it is, you know, if it's your son or something, you know, then you feel that,
he's violated.
Yeah. They were molested, you know.
Yeah, and he was. I mean, you can't make an adult decision like that and have to, you know, now he has two children.
Yeah.
You know.
That's true.
That he would, you know.
But there's no consent under 18, you know. It's just people are not prepared for that kind of stuff.
I met a lady, oh my gosh, in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And she worked at a dress shop, and the sweetest woman. And she was very beautiful, around like her late 30s, early 40s. Very beautiful, though. And she talks like this. And we were like asking her about her life, asking her about her story. And it came out, she's like, well, you see, I met my husband when I was 9 years old, and we started dating
when I was around 11 or 12. And we got married when I was 14 years old. And it was her father's friend who was in his 30s.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And she's still married to him.
Are you serious?
And they have four kids.
Jeez.
And I said, she goes, you know, when you look back and you think about it, it does seem a bit off. It's a bit yeah, off. I wouldn't recommend it, but you know, you take the good with the bad.
Uh-huh.
And you take the good with the bad. And but when I die and go to heaven, I'm going to ask God, why'd you give me four sons and a voice like this? I don't know. She was actually so angelic and beautiful. But yeah, I mean, they had to actually leave the state to go to a different state to where they can get married legally at 14.
At 14.
And her parents were furious.
Yeah, so but wait a minute. She would have to have her parents' consent in order to get married.
Not in this particular state.
Are you serious?
She left.
Can't be.
They fled. They fled from her parents. And it was a family friend that was, you know, taking the kids out for ice cream.
Really? Wow.
And, you know, they were sexually active when she was still, you know, preteen and then, you know, preteen years.
Preteen. Wow.
Like 12.
Yeah.
You know? How do you fall in love with somebody that age?
Yeah. And then you don't. You just fall in love with the... with the flesh.
Yeah, and then you know? But then you stay married and you have kids. I'm like, how is the same man going to want to have sex with you as a 40-year-old woman?
Yeah.
If he fell in love with you at a 12-year-old woman body. You
know? Well, go figure.
9 years old. That's just
people
awful.
Do some crazy shit.
Yeah, that's why I really do believe in. I don't believe in that. You know, people that want to get rid of the consent and all that stuff, or like, you know, the age limits. They want to kind of take away the age.
Oh,
limits.
Really?
Yeah. There's like a lot. There's so much. There's Nambla. Have you heard of Nambla?
NAMBLA.
I have
because it was on Howard Stern many times.
It's ridiculous.
The National Association of Men Boy Love.
It's awful.
Of America or
I
something.
It's awful.
Yeah.
No, I mean it's like let people get to an age where they can really at least have a chance to understand the decision they're going to make,
right.
And then let them make a choice. I think it's so selfish. When you want to take away somebody else's choice for your own gratification. Or, no choices involved. But, I mean, they don't want to know what the hell they're doing. They're freaking 10 years old.
Exactly. You
know? Do you know when you're 10? I didn't know anything when I was 22. You know what I mean? Seriously, you didn't.
Right.
You don't know. Oh, man, I want to tell you a story, but it's going to incriminate me. I can't tell it. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you could say it's a friend.
Okay, no, it's about me. So I can't. Actually, I'll tell it, but I'll leave out some details. Oh, my gosh. I hope nobody I know is listening.
Well, you don't have to. Then don't go into it.
It's just an
awkward. You're going to regret it later.
Okay, I'm just going to tell you anyway. So last night, I went to this mixer,
uh-huh.
And I, you know, looked across the room, and there's a guy there that
and I saw this handsome looking...
No, I actually... No. Well, he is cute,
okay,
but no, I saw a guy that I made out with.
Oh,
really?
And
not that I, you know, randomly do that, but it was when I was like 21, mm-hmm. and I was... Or 22 or something like 20 something young and dumb type thing.
Right.
We totally got our makeout on, and we never dated or anything. It was just kind of like one of those stupid kind of makeout things, and you're young and stupid. But then I like here I am, you know, 5, 6, 7 years later, and I'm, you know, in my later 20s, and uh-huh. It's been years, and I see this guy that I didn't even barely know, and totally got our makeout on, and so I just went up to him.
Really?
I did. I was like, wow. Look. I mean, I was like, this is L.A. I thought you were supposed to be able to get away from your mistakes and never have to see him again. You know what I mean? And so I went up to him. And I was like, hi. And it's been like 5 or 6 years. Not that
right.
I look very different, but it's not like we were getting married or had any real relationship. So
right.
For those of you listening, this is not a habit of mine, but it was just one of those weird situations. So I went up to him. I was like, hey, how you doing? And he was like, hi.
Did he recognize you?
He's like, you look really familiar. I said, so do you. And he's looking at me, and I'm smiling, and he's starting to smile. And I said, are you still in real estate? Mm-hmm. And he's like, what is this? How do you know that? And
yeah.
I said, about 6 or 7 years ago, I broke your towel rack in your bathroom. Do you remember me? We were making out in his bathroom, and I put my arm on the towel rack that's attached to the wall, and it fell out of the bathroom.
I see. Okay.
It's so bad. It's not like a bad sign.
Did he remember?
Oh, my gosh. He remembered. He had the biggest smile on his face.
Really?
He was like, oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, who goes up to somebody like that and, like, relives it? But I was like, you know, when in Rome.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting in L.A. I thought you could just, like, run away from those mistakes and, you know.
Yeah, well, you could have if you hadn't approached him.
It's true, but I figured, you know, let's seize the day. Carpe diem. You know, let's seize... I call it seize the awkward.
Yeah.
Seize the awkward. It's just interesting. It's interesting to get, you know, some... It's not, like I said, it's not a habit, but it was just a little make-out crazy session with a weird guy that I didn't really know and happened to run
Plus
into him.
Plus, it's cool. I mean, if you know the person and you remember them from a few years ago, why not say hi, you know?
I just wanted to kind of experience what it would feel like later down, you know, 5, 6, 7. I mean, when was that? That was about 6 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And see what that would kind of, that little encounter would feel like and the awkwardness of it. I don't know why.
Yeah. So, I mean, did you feel any attraction to him?
I definitely thought he's very funny and he's cute, but I mean, I'm not interested.
No.
I mean,
no making out at this time.
No, I was young. You know, you're young. You don't even know what the hell you're doing. You're just like freaking bag of hormones and you're just a kid and you don't
know
anything.
Just want to have fun.
Yeah, you're like, I'm going to rip this towel rack out of the wall. No, I just, it was the funniest thing because we were trying to like totally make out and be like hot and like I was leaning against it and then it fell and I was like, oh my God, just broke your towel rack. And he was like, that's so hot. He's like, he loved that I broke his towel rack. So, yeah, anyway.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, that was, have you ever ran into anything like that?
No, I can't say I have.
It's good. You're a better person.
Yeah, you just kind of leave the people behind and you move on, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, unless you go to a mixer.
Yeah, I guess.
I guess.
So that was the right night for the mixer, I guess, last night.
It was last night, yeah.
Yeah.
This was actually a separate little mixer.
Oh, a different one.
Yeah, I mean, I really went with
a friend. You went with someone?
Yeah, I went with a girlfriend of mine. She's in business and it was a business kind of social thing and people from all consultants, you know, brokers, all those kind of lawyers, people there. And
so what were you hoping to find there?
Went with her as a guest. So it really wasn't for me. It was more just to keep her company, you know, because sometimes people, for me, I'm not saying I'm superwoman, but I can kind of go into any social situation and just meet people and, you know, pretty much handle it and it not be awkward or uncomfortable. For some people, they don't want to go alone.
They need a wingman or something.
Yeah, they need a wingwoman. So I was like, sure, I'll go. And, you know, they had a mashed potato. Potato bar?
Really?
Oh my gosh, they call it Spudologist. So they have like little little martini glasses, and they have all these different mashed potatoes, and they'll scoop mashed potatoes, and then they'll add all these fixings into them, like different cheeses and onions and spices, and then they whip it up, and then they put it in the martini glass and give you a little spoon.
Really?
Oh my gosh, I was so drunk off mashed potatoes. Okay.
Oh, so there's actually martini in the glass?
No, it's just.
So how did you get like?
Oh, I wasn't really drunk. I was just playing because I had so many mashed potatoes.
I see. Okay. Drunk on potatoes.
It was just really good.
Yeah.
It was so good. Yeah. So, I mean, it was worth it because of those mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, really good. But no, we met a lot of really cool people. It was fun. I mean, I love socializing and meeting people and, you know.
Yeah.
It was cool. Yeah. So we went.
Sounds cool.
And, you know.
So what do you do? I mean, we never talked about what you do, like when you leave here and stuff. What do you do?
It's very different every day. I mean, if I have a gig, you know, an acting job, I do that, and that's occasional. I'm also, I think I told you, on this will be starting up in April, I'm with a TV show called Vision TV, and it's exclusive to salons and spas, and I'm going to be doing some spokesperson-type hosting for them.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah, I got hired actually a couple months ago, and we did some stuff in Long Beach, and they're coming back out in April, so I'll be doing some stuff, and hopefully some travel, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm constantly working on my craft. You know, like, I have a show March 3rd at Molly Malone's.
Yeah, I saw that on Facebook.
Yeah.
Where is it at?
Molly Malone's is between Olympic, or it's near 6th Street in Fairfax in West Hollywood, that area.
Okay.
And it's like an Irish pub, but they have it's a great music venue, and they always have great artists. And I'm actually with kind of a show being put on by Mosaic, which is the church that I've been going to, but it's not really a church thing. It's just they're just really they got kind of a good eye or ear for music and artists. So it's called Gold or something is the name of the showcase. And so it's going to have a lot of great artists there and bands. And so I'm going to be doing my set.
So you're going to be singing there or doing comedy?
Singing and playing guitar, but comedy is always there. You know,
yeah,
I can't get rid of the funny.
No, huh?
Especially when I do music because I get more nervous doing music.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's in a different way I get nervous because it's very vulnerable. It's very like, you know, you're really going there. It's not, you're not hiding behind a joke or ha ha ha. So I feel very exposed. So when I get nervous, I get more funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I get on stage and my personality does not match my music at all.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey guys, I'm a little jokey joke. And then I sing and it's really like, you know, so deep and great. And then I jokey joke. And so nonetheless, it's extremely entertaining.
Yeah. Can we hear any of your songs online if we wanted
to?
Yeah,
you guys can go to myspace.com/Kara Kimbrough Music. Now, I do want to say that this is a rough demo of the music, and it's very rough.
Yeah.
Are you playing something right now?
Well, I'm gonna find it. Hold on a second.
I think the song Christy is a really good song maybe to play.
Okay, let me first try to get it by spelling it correctly. Kara Kimbrough Music, right?
Kara Kimbrough, KIMBROUGH Music.
Right. I know how to spell your name.
Okay.
Okay. So let's see. I mean, MySpace usually takes forever to load.
Yeah.
Of course.
And the song Christy, I think it's probably a good soundtrack type song.
Oh, Christy. Okay. Sounds good. Okay. We're going to hear Kara singing her song. Wow.
Thanks.
This world could be pretty nice, pretty nice, pretty nice. Just too convenient out there for the way we feel, the way we feel. Charm is the essence, and it was a yes with ego. Faith can be nothing when you start together, she said.
Oh, it's an unusual song. Kara.
Thanks.
I mean, this is like, you do things with your voice here that is pretty interesting.
Thanks. Yeah.
Did you compose a song?
I did, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I'm impressed.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's all a work in progress. And I mean, like I said, that was just a rough draft recording. And, when I get the resources, I'm going to go back and re-record it all. And it's going to have a little bit of a better quality. And just, it takes on a different life as an artist the more you work on stuff. So.
Yeah. But you got to evolve this, you know? I mean, it takes steps and
stuff.
It
does take steps.
That.
And the live version is just a fuller, different sound, so.
Really?
Yeah. But it's great. But I'm really grateful. I mean, I've been really blessed to be able to, like, have a breakthrough with the music and be able to kind of write music that it's so cool when people are singing your stuff. And they're, like, moved by it or, you know, it's just a different language. And then you hear people
getting it's a different kind of song. I mean, you know, it's like not the traditional stuff.
I have more poppy music as well. And that'll be at Molly Malone's, too. I mean, I have some stuff that's a little bit more bluesy and a little bit more like a...
Right.
That song there is close and dear to me. And it's about my sister who died. Mm-hmm. And but it's a kind of a haunting, kind of an ambiance type feel,
right?
You know, and that's a different song, but I could kind of see in like a soundtrack or something like that.
Yeah.
But
so did you have any processing done on your voice here?
No, huh? Unfortunately.
Amazing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I would actually like for a few things to be tweaked, but no, it's all me. No, and very, very little mixing too. Like they're just it wasn't like super, you know, well produced. It was just kind of thrown together. It was a very, you know.
Yeah. But, well, you can get a pretty good idea from it.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Of course. Well, we got a singer here.
And a comedian.
Wow.
Yeah, so March 3rd, come out, Sam.
Yes, definitely, and we'll continue promoting it and stuff. Yeah. I'm definitely going to try and come out.
Yeah, I think it's at 8 or 7:30.
What day of the week is it?
It's a Wednesday.
A Wednesday. Okay,
I think I can do it. And it's fun.
Yeah. It's not the money, just finding the time to drive down to Hollywood and stuff. But, but I'm definitely, I'm really curious now.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be great if we can. Oh, yeah, I'm going to have audio, and I'm going to have some recordings of it, so that'd be good.
Sounds good. All right, well, another show in the can.
There we go.
You're quiet all of a sudden. It's
there
like, oh, I don't have to talk anymore today.
There we go.
So, everybody, thank you all for joining us. Kira, have a great day.
Thank you, Sam.
And we'll be back here tomorrow.
Okay.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. To get in contact with the show, please send email to info@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say.